Good morning.
Good morning. May it please the court, my name is Mike Zodi, and I have my partner Mike Larson here with me today. I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal, please. Petitioners are asking the court to overturn EPA's designations of portions of Box Elder and Tooele counties in northern Utah as being in non-attainment with the PM2.5 National Ambient Air Quality Standard, or NAAQS. Box Elder and Tooele counties, which are predominantly rural counties, themselves meet the standard. Therefore, EPA had to find that they contribute to the non-attainment of the nearby urban area. Because EPA's designations are arbitrary, we ask the court to vacate those designations and remand to EPA for further proceedings. I want to start my argument with one of the key factors from our perspective and really the linchpin of EPA's case, and that's meteorology. EPA acknowledges you need evidence of pollutant transport between the county, which itself is meeting the standard, and the non-attaining urban area in order to sustain.
Or of the county that's not meeting the standard.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's got to get from the county that's not meeting the standard to the non-attaining area.
Right.
Wait a minute. The county that's not meeting the standard
has to transport
to the
non-attaining. Yes.
No, it could be that the county meeting
exactly.
transporting, causing the other county to become non-attaining.
Exactly. Right. And frankly, that was Utah's view and would be our view as well. But we don't have to go quite that far. As the process works, the scientists at the Utah Division of Air Quality.
I thought the state of Utah's position was that the two counties should be treated as
unclassifiable.
Yeah.
Yeah, actually, technically you're right, Your Honor.
Yeah, right.
That's right. But scientists at the Utah Division of Air Quality staked out the position that during wintertime inversions, and that's when we have the problem in Salt Lake City, in our area, the wind doesn't really move much. We get stagnant winds, we get high pressure that captures the pollution, and it doesn't move around very much. But Utah's position was, there are no overall organized winds that blow the pollution one way or the other. Yet EPA hinges its contribution finding on its theory, and this is critical to its theory, that the winds collectively blow north and south during these inversions for certain periods. And by having that theory, they can say Box Elder's emissions get blown south to the non-attaining urban area.
I thought it was more than a theory, that they had these monitors and they were reading the wind flows at certain times.
That's right, but as we point out, and I really want to walk through that evidence for you, is why we say that theory is not supported. That's why I call it a theory. We don't feel they've adequately supported it with the relevant evidence, Your Honor. And so just to orient the court, if I'm in downtown Salt Lake City and to my west, we would have Tooele County. We would be up and over a mountain, the Ochre Mountains. To my right, to the east, we would have the Wasatch Mountains, or a little bit higher than the Ochre Mountains. To the north would be Box Elder County, quite a distance. There's the Great Salt Lake that comes in. The Wasatch Mountains keep running. To the north, there are some mountains, but they are not as high. The Promontory Mountains, they are not as high. So EPA used these wind roses that Your Honor referenced. And it was the primary tool they used throughout the country to assess the direction the wind blows when there are violations. For the original Box Elder and Weber County wind roses, and Weber County is critical here because you have Box Elder County, Weber County, Davis County, Salt Lake County. So we have four counties lined up north to south. For Box Elder and Weber County, for their wind roses, when they plotted when there were high exceedances of the standard, the original wind roses use meteorological data from Salt Lake City, the Salt Lake City International Airport. And in fact, of the 16 wind roses included in the original designation, the proposal, all but one used one data point for meteorology in downtown Salt Lake City. Using that data in the proposal, it did show when the wind blew from the north, there was impact to the south. And it supported EPA's theory. ATK, my client, and the state of Utah pointed out that you can't use MET data from Salt Lake City. It's too far away. You're overgeneralizing by using just this MET data. And so EPA changed what MET data it used. It found localized data from Hill Air Force Base and used that for both Box Elder and Weber County. And it changed the windrows. In fact, it flipped it. It showed for both Box Elder and Weber County, when the wind was blowing from the south, Box Elder was being impacted. So it changed it 180 degrees. But in the final technical support document, EPA keeps the exact same conclusion, asserting that Box Elder and Weber show impact from the northwest. They did not reassess that conclusion. This was new evidence. They had an obligation to reassess it, and they did not. And it's significant. It shows just the opposite. In its briefing, EPA tries to argue, in our view, unconvincingly, that somehow the one MET station data point in Salt Lake City is somehow more relevant than the localized data, which goes against its own methodology. When it describes, and we've cited this to the record, in the record at Joint Appendix 323, in describing the windrows, as EPA says, yeah, you want localized meteorological data. So with the best data, it rebuts EPA's conclusion. They needed to address that. They had an obligation, and the case law says, when you have new evidence, significant evidence, you have to address it. So let me move then to the Tooele windrows for Tooele County. Again, it uses Salt Lake City meteorological data. Remember, Tooele is over the mountains to the west. That windrose shows impact when the winds are blowing from northwest and southeast. Now, Tooele southeast would be captured by the Ochre Mountains. There's no connection from the southeast to Salt Lake City.
I don't understand. I mean, I thought the point was that you have Salt Lake City. It's surrounded. The wind blows over because the cold temperatures keep the emissions there. It just swirls around until the weather gets warmer and the emissions can disperse. I mean, you're not saying there's no wind, are you?
No, we're not saying there's no wind. They're very light winds, generally 4 miles per hour or less.
You're not taking issue with the cold weather and the wind inversion and all that?
No, you know, I live there. We experience that, Your Honor. But we are taking issue with where the pollution is coming from and where it's building up from, Your Honor. So, but the point with Tooele is it shows impact when the wind's blowing from the northwest. Now, the northwest would be towards Idaho, away from downtown Salt Lake City, and the southeast would be Tooele's own emissions. So it's not showing any connection. My clients want the benefit of the windrows data as it exists. That's all we're asking for, and we think it's significant. So lacking credible evidence with the windroses, EPA relies upon some other data, and I want to walk through that for the court. First, it relies upon the high split model. And this is, you know, a mathematical model. And EPA has conceded that this model has generated, quote, uncertain results, close quote, was of, quote, limited usefulness, close quote, and, quote, may not accurately represent local wind conditions. Joint Appendix 754. Mm-hmm. And if the court would consider the map at Joint Appendix 473, and I don't know if you can get to that at this point, but it illustrates the fallacy of this high split model. Because what that purports to show, using that high split model, which EPA says itself has problems, it purports to show a particle would start in Wyoming, go across the Cache Valley, over the Wasatch Mountains, down through Brigham City, and all the way to Salt Lake City. The problem is EPA has designated Cache County as a completely separate non-attainment area because the Wasatch Mountains block the flow. The model cannot account for the mountains. It's just a fact. So it doesn't give us the answer. So conceding essentially the weakness of that model, EPA came up with some new tools in rebuttal to Utah. And what it did, it looked at a series of meteorological stations along the Wasatch Front. We came to call this the Blue Salmon Chart, as you see it in the technical support document. EPA looked at all of these MET stations and tried to find a trend. And it says, and you'll see it draws arrows where it's blue going south and salmon going north, but it did not analyze or shade the east-west flow. So if you don't shade the east-west flow, and I went through and did this last night, there are unshaded areas, you just circle them.
And by the word shade, you mean what?
Simply highlighting. That's all they did.
So, oh, you mean just point them out on the chart?
Yes.
Oh, I see. All right.
That's all they do as far as I can tell.
Well, there are a lot of words here that are terms of art, all right? So I want to be clear.
Yes, and it is a complex case to digest for sure, technically. But what I did is they're unshaded numbers. I circled them. And all of a sudden, you've got east and west flows breaking up these supposed straight lines. That evidence is not convincing and doesn't meet the reasonableness test. And if you do it yourself and you shade these sections, you'll see there's no north-south flow like they say. Moreover, when you look...
This is J.A. what?
You can see the figure actually in EPA's brief at page 51, Your Honor. And then you can, there are actually two figures in the joint appendix. They include one. Mm-hmm. And also JA 581 through 587, Your Honor, is actually where these are located. Mm-hmm. And if you look at those carefully, what you'll see is that they only conclude that Utah County impacts Salt Lake County. That's what they really are focusing on and concluding. So, We've shown so far how EPA's evidence does not get it to this overall north-south flow. Then EPA tries to use Utah's evidence against it. Utah submitted a diagram, and this is at Joint Appendix 789 through 92. And Utah submitted it to rebut EPA's assertion of overall flow. And at EPA's brief at page 35, you can find this as well. And Utah says, look at these MET stations. They generally show...
Could I just ask you...
Yes.
At 580, EPA says that what this chart that you say isn't properly shaded, it says, rather than showing only winds controlled by local topography during the cold pool inversion patterns, the resulting diagrams show basin scale uniformity in wind direction for much of the basin over much of the inversion periods. I mean, they're trying to respond to the argument that the mountains are keeping this out, as I understand.
Well, actually, in my view, Your Honor, what they're trying to respond to is Utah's assertion. Utah says, EPA, we're on the ground here. We've got scientists on the ground. We live here. These winds do not uniformly blow north and south like you're saying. And so Utah submits its own chart and page 51 of EPA's brief that shows the localized flows near the mouth of the canyons. I mean, that's what goes on, and it's generally east and west. EPA uses that chart and says to Utah, well, that actually supports our theory because it shows flows can go out over to the Salt Lake and then move around. If you look at that chart, it does not show anything getting to the Great Salt Lake.
We're talking about the chart now on 35? Not chart, pardon me.
Diagram, page 51, Your Honor. You just look at the face of it. It does not show any flows, and Utah was not submitting it to say that flows went over the Great Salt Lake.
No, but I'm back. This is the same chart that's on 581 of the joint appendix, all right? And on 580, EPA is explaining what this chart shows in response, as I understood it. And
yes.
Maybe EPA can tell me if I'm incorrect about that, but I thought that's what the purpose of that chart was.
Yeah, I think, my view, it just is to show north-south flow.
Right.
And on 581, you'll see it says in the chart itself, Utah County emissions were transported to Salt Lake City. Mm-hmm. Doesn't say Box Elder, doesn't say Tooele. Bless you.
Okay. What was your second point? You were in.
Then the last point. Well, the last point there is that EPA's diagram on page 35 of its brief does not show anywhere emissions reaching the Great Salt Lake, yet that's what they say it shows. So that's our reason for saying EPA science doesn't support its conclusion. It needs to go back to the drawing board. It needs to work more carefully with the state of Utah, which has scientists on the ground who understand these conditions.
All right, but behind these charts are these technical analyses that are done. I mean, the charts can't just be taken in isolation.
Well, you know, Your Honor, I've done my best to walk through all, you know, every piece of evidence they've submitted, and we just don't think it gets them there.
All right.
Respectfully.
You haven't demonstrated errors in the technical analysis itself on which EPA is relying.
I think there are errors in how they characterize the data, essentially.
Okay.
I mean, it doesn't say what they say it says, essentially. It doesn't support their conclusion. So turning to the remaining factors, and I just have a little bit of time. If it's okay, I might just reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal at this point. Basically, we built a comparison argument with some other counties, the point of which was to show how EPA takes supposedly the same standard and tweaks it.
In geographically opposite parts of the country.
Admittedly, but when you're talking about...
But isn't that key?
Well, actually, I mean, first of all, we're talking about satellite counties around an urban non-attainment area. EPA says we applied the same nine factors. So let's see if they applied the same nine factors. Let's take population, for instance. For Utah, Tooele and Box Elder, they had a population density of only 7. Very, very low. They're urban-rural counties. So EPA says... Well, they actually have a high population density because 51% of their people live in a city. Mm-hmm. That's not a density figure. That's a different test. Mm-hmm. It's not the same test they were applying to other counties. And so if you carefully go through that, and we put a chart together at page 6 of our reply brief to try and...
says EPA, this is all explained by topography, all right? So the impact of populations is different depending on the topography.
Well, if they say that, then they aren't really applying their nine-factor test. They purported to apply it on the record. I mean, all we can do is say, this is what they told us they applied, and did they apply each of those factors fairly? And that was really the point of our comparison, to show they're moving that standard around at different points, even for the same factor. So... it's not even the same factor if you're saying population is density. No, it's percentage. That's the point.
All right.
You made a related point, parallel point, with regard to commuting.
Yes.
That you're using percentage of commuters in your area and the number of commuters there. What about the, it would seem to me that of the various data entered, that the vehicle miles traveled would be the relevant measure.
Vehicle miles traveled and the actual numbers of commuters are indeed relevant in Utah, and we cite this in our brief. They actually went through and did a technical calculation of the amount of emissions you could actually attribute to Box Elder and Tooele County's emissions, and it's in our opening brief. And it became like 0.5%. It's a valid technical demonstration. So what Utah was saying is, let's look at the actual emissions impact. So, because these numbers can become very vague and have no meaning.
That's even
no
better than vehicle mile travel.
Yes.
Vehicle miles traveled, I guess.
Yes, that's
but
a
the
more
one thing that I, when EPA will address it, I'm sure, I don't understand is how one could use percentage of commuters as meaning anything.
In our view, it really doesn't, because it all depends on the numbers of people. And in the Catawba County case, EPA actually, in the court, focused on actual population or numbers of people. So I see I've reached my time. I will
All
take
right.
any more questions.
Why don't you reserve the rest of your time, and we'll hear from EPA.
Thank you.
Thank you. Shannon?
May it please the court. My name is Jessica O'Donnell with the Department of Justice, representing respondent EPA. With me at council's table is Jeff Wilcox from EPA's Office of General Counsel. Before I respond to petitioners' specific points that they address in their oral argument, I'd like to bring the court back to some key principles, two overarching principles that really should frame the court's view of EPA's case. The first is that EPA applied consistently applied a nine-factor weight of the evidence analysis to determine the non-attainment designations for Box Elder and Tooele and for all other areas of the country. This nine-factor weight of the evidence approach that EPA applied has already been approved by this court in the Catawba v. EPA case. So the only question for this court is whether EPA applied that framework, that nine-factor analysis, reasonably here. And as we demonstrate in our brief, and as I'll explain addressing petitioner-specific points, EPA was reasonable in applying that test to Box Elder and Tooele and determining that Box Elder and Tooele contribute to violations in nearby counties along the Wasatch Front. The important thing about this nine-factor analysis to realize is that EPA came up with an approach that both could be consistently applied across the country, but could also take into account the variety of factors that affect PM2.5 pollution in different parts of the country. Because PM2.5 is created by a variety of different sources and a variety of different conditions, different facts and circumstances on the ground in the area are critical. Which brings me to my second point, the overarching point, which is that the facts in this case really matter. And the facts and circumstances on the ground relating to the Salt Lake City non-attainment area are really what's driving EPA's non-attainment designation. And if you take a look at the map that EPA included at page 8 at its brief, it just sort of provides a very useful orientation for the evidence that EPA looked at. The shaded areas in green show the non-attainment the area that EPA designated as non-attainment.
The page again, sorry.
It's page 8 in EPA's brief. It's page 1005 of the joint appendix.
So green is non-attainment.
Green is non-attainment, and the black lines denote the non-attainment area. And if as you can see, this map, I also like this map because it really shows the topography very well. And the topography is one of the key factors of the nine factors that's driving EPA's analysis. And as you can see, EPA drew the non-attainment area boundaries to closely correspond to the large mountain ranges that surround this area. The large mountain ranges essentially trap the PM2.5 emissions in the area. And as petitioners recognize, during wintertime temperature inversions, there are high pressure or temperature inversions sit on top of the area and capture the pollution in the area. And so EPA concluded that those emission sources, those people and other emission sources that are located within the area surrounded by and defined by the mountainous topography contribute to the violations that the severe non-attainment problems, the severe PM2.5 violations that you see in Weber, Davis, and Salt Lake counties. Now I'll turn to addressing petitioners' specific arguments. It is odd to me that they would recognize meteorology as sort of the linchpin of their argument, because I think that's one of the factors in combination with topography that really shows EPA's, the reasonableness of EPA's analysis.
Well, why don't you deal specifically with what he pointed out?
Sure. Petitioner first argues that EPA is unreasonable because the EPA is ignoring the Box Elder windrows. The two key windrows that EPA relied upon are at page 53 and 54 of EPA's brief. The problem with petitioner's argument that the box elder Winrose, that EPA was unreasonable in not ignoring the box elder Winrose, is that the box elder Winrose doesn't show where the pollution was coming from on days when PM 2.5 concentrations were high at violating monitors. As petitioners explained, box elder at the time was in attainment with the standard. Nevertheless, as Judge Rogers pointed out, that doesn't mean that it's not generating emissions that might be contributing to areas downwind. On page 54 of our brief, you see the Winrose for, or the pollution rose for Salt Lake City County, or for Salt Lake County, which is one of the monitors that is showing violations of the PM 2.5 standard. This is the Winrose that you would want to look at if you want to determine where the wind was coming from on days when the PM 2.5 standard was being violated. And this Winrose demonstrates that the wind is traveling in a northwest and a southeasterly oscillating pattern. And if you look back at the map on page 8, Box Elder is to the northeast of the Salt Lake County area, demonstrating that the wind from the northwesterly flowing wind can bring emissions from Box Elder to counties to the south and southeast, like Salt Lake County and Davis County. Petitioners, the second point that petitioners try, to sum up, petitioners are simply relying on the wrong Winrose, and EPA's application, its analysis of the Winroses was consistent throughout the country. EPA.
What about the second point that EPA started out with these 16 monitors and then it responded to comments that some of these were too distant, so it went to Hill Air Force Base? And their argument is that Winrose is not consistent with EPA's theory.
Well, I think that EPA changed or revised the data for the Box Elder Winrose, demonstrates that EPA wasn't ignoring the influence of local wind patterns. However, EPA determined that it's the basin scale winds that are representative, and that the basin scale wind flow is what EPA needs to evaluate for purposes of determining whether emissions from Box Elder are contributing to areas to the south and southeast.
So it's the Hill Air Force Base Winrose is irrelevant?
It's not irrelevant, but it's not representative of the overall wind pattern in the area. It's more indicative of the influence of local topography, which it's more indicative of the influence of local topography. However, what EPA is looking at is where is the wind coming from where is the wind coming from on days when the Salt Lake County is violating the standard. And to see that, you need to look at the Salt Lake County rose.
And petitioner says in the final rule, EPA doesn't address this new evidence.
It's not that EPA doesn't address it. It simply focuses on the more relevant data.
And so does EPA at any point address the Hill Air Force Base data?
Well, EPA addresses the issue that
That's a yes or no, and then you can explain.
EPA addresses the Hill Air Force data by changing the data that is changing the data that's associated with the Box Elder Winrose. But EPA's analysis doesn't change because EPA is still looking at
I'm trying to understand in just very simple terms. EPA agrees that it's going to look at this evidence from the monitor at the Hill Air Force Base. And petitioner's argument is that doesn't support this theory of transport. And I understand your point to say that there may be other data that does support your theory. But my only question is, did EPA ever say somewhere what was wrong and why the Hill Air Force Base data didn't cause it to reevaluate its conclusions?
EPA doesn't, I believe EPA does not address specifically the Hill Air Force Base data, but EPA does at length address this issue of whether EPA's analysis should be dictated by the local wind data or whether EPA should be looking at the overall basin scale uniformity.
And this is in the
wind
technical document?
If you look in the EPA addresses it in the response to comments, and I don't have that site handy, but I can provide it to you. And EPA also addresses it in a memoranda detailing its responses to Utah's comments on the EPA's recommended designations. And I can, that is at, JA 981 through 988.
Thank you.
But I just want to emphasize that the point is that EPA looked at the wind rows that reflected wind data that showed where the direction of the wind was coming from on days at violating monitors. And that's really what you should be looking at when you're trying to determine where emissions were coming from, where they were being transported from on days when there are violations in nearby areas. Additionally, I just want to point out that with regard to the Box Elder windrows, it also relies on a very limited data set. The rows only operates one out of every 3 days, and it shows only 5 days where there were exceedances of the standard in Box Elder. But it's, you know, the Salt Lake County rows is looking at 24 days where there were exceedances of the standard, and therefore that rows is more relevant to EPA's analysis of where the wind was coming from on days when the Salt Lake County rows was violating the standard. Now I'd like to move on to addressing petitioner's arguments about the high split model. EPA, petitioner sees on EPA's recognition that the high split model was only useful in limited circumstances, but EPA qualified that by saying that it is useful in, for the you know, the purposes that EPA was using it here, which is to look to determine basin scale uniformity of wind patterns. And Judge Rogers read EPA's statements in the TSD exactly right. EPA concluded, based on the high split data, that EPA concluded that its analysis of the high split data showed basin scale wind patterns in a northwesterly, southeasterly pattern. Petitioners went through a discussion of EPA's high split model images or diagrams shown in the administrative record. And I just want to point out some errors in their description of the diagram or their reading of the diagram that explain why EPA was using this tool appropriately and appropriately recognizing its limitations. If you look at the diagram on page 474 of the joint appendix, I believe they pointed at page 473, but page 474 actually is easier to sort of understand how this works. What the high split model is basically a diagram showing the path the wind flows took on a particular day. EPA uses NOAA wind data that's broken out into every 3 hours of a 3-day period, and when the back trajectories that are generated as a result of that process show the path the wind took on the way to a violating monitor. EPA did recognize that high split is limited in some ways because it doesn't, for example, recognize topography. So in this diagram, you see the on page 474, you see the white lines, which are if the high split are supposed to be looked at as an animation. But these white lines demonstrate where it would show you the air was traveling. And as petitioners know, the lines show that the wind travels through the mountains. And while EPA knows, obviously, we all know that the wind doesn't travel through the mountains, and the mountains are obviously going to have some impact on the wind flow. But what EPA was looking at was not the wind patterns. What EPA did was take a snapshot of a 24-hour period when the winds were actually already in the basin and not being affected by those wind patterns. And what EPA was looking at in terms of its analysis was not the white lines, but these blue dots that are associated with various violating monitors. And what the blue dots show is where the wind was coming from for that 24-hour period. Each dot equals a data point. If you look at, for example, the Bountiful by UTM, which is the and then there's a red triangle, that is a indicates a violating monitor. And what this diagram shows and the lining up of blue dots is that the wind direction during this time period, this 24-hour time period, where the wind is circulating within the basin, is coming from a north northwesterly direction. And this is further at supporting EPA's conclusion, not EPA's theory, that the wind is coming from a northwesterly direction and could transport emissions from Box Elder and Tooele to counties to the south and southeast.
See that by the white lines?
No, you have to actually look at the blue dots. The white lines show what the model would show if it was not the white lines show the full 3 days of right. The model data, but EPA was only looking at a 24-hour snapshot because it recognized that the model doesn't take into account the topography's effect on the wind data. But by looking at a 24-hour snapshot, EPA is able to discount the effect of topography and look only at the wind data when the wind is actually in the basin, not being affected by the topography. And if you look at the blue dots, they're going up into, they're from the monitor, they're traveling from the northwest down to the southeast. The pattern is from the northwest down to the southeast. That's how the dots are lining up.
I understand you're telling me that, but I'm not sure why this chart shows that.
Well, that's what EPA's analysis of this indicates. But even if you did, the high split model was only one of multiple pieces of information that EPA looked at to analyze wind data. EPA recognized that there were criticisms of the high split model, and then it looked at on the ground wind data from 21 Utah monitors, and that resulted in a diagram which petitioners refer to as the blue salmon diagram, which is on page 51 of EPA's brief. The first thing that this diagram demonstrates is that EPA did not ignore the east-west wind flow. EPA simply didn't give it a color, blue or salmon. But the
sorry, I missed the page number.
It's page 51 of EPA's brief.
Okay.
And what this is a diagram of wind data from 21 Utah DAQ monitors.
Oh, this is the one we were talking about.
This is the one, yes, this is the third piece of evidence that EPA relied on, looking at the wind data. Each row shows a different monitor location from, and they're lined up from north to south. So the first monitor location is in Box Elder County at Brigham City, and then it goes southward along the Wasatch Front. Each dot along in each row shows a reading from a different hour of the day. But the key to reading this, and the blue boxes indicate a northwest or northeasterly flow. The salmon boxes indicate a southerly component, and the white boxes indicate the east-west flow. And what's significant about this diagram is that it's showing you, the black arrows are showing you, that at different times during the day, the wind at all of the monitors, the DAQ, the surface wind, at all of the monitors is lining up in this consistent pattern of either northwest or southeast. So from this, EPA drew the conclusion that there is basin scale uniformity of wind pattern in the basin, and that that northwesterly flow can transport emissions from Box Elder to violating monitors to the south.
All right.
Well, Donald, you did not jump to to respond to the question I prefigured for you during the petitioner's argument. Can you address that?
If you was this about the commuting
yes.
data versus the and the VMT?
Yeah.
I mean, this goes to petitioner's argument that EPA was inconsistent, and with specifically with regard to your
inconsistent and illogical. It may not have been. It could be either one.
Well, with regard to the commuting data, the issue is whether it was appropriate for EPA to look at percentages and what that told EPA.
What
and it was called? Reasonable for EPA to look at percentages because the percentage demonstrated the integral connection. EPA, it was a, the percentage that EPA looked at was the percentage of commuters going to the one of the violating areas. And so what the percentage number shows you versus the raw number is the integral connection between the contributing areas and the non-attainment areas, which is one of the reasons why EPA is using the commuting data as one of the nine factors. But what the commuting data and the VMT data also show you is that it's not just the emissions that are brought to the non-attainment area by virtue of the cars traveling from Box Elder to Salt Lake County, for example. It also reflects that there are emissions being generated in Box Elder that are then able to be transported from Box Elder to violating counties to the southeast and demonstrate that Box Elder is, along with the other nine factors, that Box Elder truly is contributing to the non-attainment problems in Salt Lake County and other counties.
Which datum tells you that?
I'm sorry?
Which datum tells you that?
The commuting data as well as the VMT data.
All right. I believe that's
addressed in our brief.
Well, all I can, 46, 45 to 46, I think is where you deal with this. And you say the petitioners do not dispute that Box Elder and Toll have high percentages of commuters. EPA considered the commuting data in combination with data from factor 5, that's urbanization
mm-hmm.
and population, showing, quote, significant predicted growth in both population and VMT for the two counties.
I'm sorry, you're reading from page 45 of our brief or from the record?
45 of your brief.
Okay.
In other words, the data reflected more than just contribution from commuters into the violating areas. The commuting and VMT data was indicative of additional emissions in Box Elder and Toll that could be transported to violating nearby areas. The thing that is mystifying to me is why you would talk at all about percentages if you have actual emissions data.
Well, it's just a different way of looking at the data. I mean, in some areas, EPA looked at the raw.
Why is it a relevant way of looking at the data? That's what I don't
know. I'm sorry.
Why is it a one relevant way of looking at the data?
Looking at the commuting data versus looking at the pure emissions data?
No. Looking at the percentage commuting.
As opposed to
the actual emissions or VMT. So you're saying some percentage of the commuters or of the residents, I think it's of the
right,
commuters.
Right, some percentage of the commuters are going to the violating area. In EPA's view, the reason why it uses this factor is that it's showing the connection between the contributing area and a violating area.
So
and
it
the
doesn't matter whether
showing
that's
the percentage shows the relative connection between.
Does it matter whether it's a low percentage or a high percentage? Or is your point just that there's some percentage?
I think it would depend on the area. I mean, in this case, it was 42, so it is a high percentage. I believe the percentage of Box Elder.
It does matter under your theory, right? I mean, there are a lot of factors, but it does matter that it's a higher percentage because it shows
there's a tighter connection, yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But the higher percentage of a lower number counts just as much as a high percentage of a high number?
I think it's just a different way of looking at the data. I mean,
it is definitely a different way. The question is why this makes any sense. You just said, well, it shows a connection. That I take that point. But you see in the comparison they give with eastern counties where they claim a discrepancy or inconsistency. It seems that a low percentage of a very large number, which is therefore larger than a high percentage of a low number, is given equal or lesser weight. And that's
well, EPA also looked at the whole numbers. And in the eastern counties, EPA wasn't looking at percentages. EPA was looking at the whole numbers. Perhaps the reason why EPA was doing that was to get at this issue that you're raising. The number of commuters is much greater.
Let me finish my question. Does it look at the tons per year going to the non-attainment areas?
Well, EPA does look at emissions data. That's another factor. And that's a factor here that shows that the emissions coming from Box Elder and Tooele are basically comparable to the emissions coming from Weber, which is a county that's actually violating, and that they're more than the emissions coming from some other areas that EPA excluded from non-attainment area.
Those emissions, that's tons per year?
Yes. EPA, and that's at... page 460 of the joint appendix. If I see that I'm out of time, but if I just may address, if I just may take a minute to sort of, I'd like to address one additional point that petitioner made, which goes to the consistency of EPA's analysis. They mentioned that EPA was not consistent in its interpretation of the population data because it looked at the density for only partial counties for Salt Lake, for Box Elder and Tooele, and it did not do that in the east. But bear in mind that these counties are vast in size, much larger than Hartford County itself, many times larger than Hartford County. And in fact, they're larger than Box Elder and Tooele, are larger than Connecticut, the whole state of Connecticut. It was not unreasonable for EPA, knowing that the population centers are sources of emissions, it was not unreasonable for EPA to look at the areas of these counties that were generating emissions to determine which areas were contributing to non-attainment in nearby counties. And in fact, in Catawba, the court recognized that this principle, that EPA can designate only those portions of a county that actually contribute to violations in nearby counties. And that site is 571 F3rd 42. And with that, if I may just take one more minute to conclude.
I just want to be clear. So petitioners are arguing that in applying these factors, for example, you talked about, as you've been discussing with Judge Ginsburg, the percentages in the two counties in Utah, percentages of commuters, but you used raw numbers when you were dealing with the two counties in the east, and that there was one other point they made that, you use the word significant, not you, but the agency uses the word significant in discussing the contribution in Hartford.
I think the gist of petitioner's argument is that they're arguing that EPA was arbitrary because it did not set any bright line threshold for what contribution would be. But this court recognized in the Catawba case that it was appropriate for EPA not to set a threshold, but rather to use a consistent nine-factor framework that it applied to each area and looked at the particular facts and circumstances of each area.
Right. But the petitioner's argument is, well, if you're saying that the contribution has to be significant for non-attainment in Hartford, but you're not using that same threshold for Box and Elder.
I don't think EPA is saying it needs to be consistent. What EPA said is it's not likely to contribute significantly with regard to this one particular factor, which was the contributing emission scores. But EPA looked at all nine factors to determine whether an area sufficiently contributed to be included within the non-attainment area. The factors that dictate whether an area is contributing in one geographic area of the country are very different, may be very different from the factors that are dictating whether an area is contributing to another geographic area. And in the Salt Lake City area, you have to look at the topography and the meteorology, which really define the area that's being affected by the PM2.5 pollution.
I don't think As I understood petitioner's point is there are 9 factors, and there are no bright lines. But if you're going to talk about significant contributions as a critical factor in the East, why aren't you talking about that in the West? And maybe it's the topography is the answer, but I'm just saying that that's their point.
Well, it's certainly possible that the effect of emissions from one area could have a greater impact in another area because of the topography, because of the trapping effect of the emissions. I mean, obviously there are more people generating more tons of emissions in the East, but the design values show that the problem in Salt Lake City is very severe. They have some of the most severe PM2.5 levels in the country, which is contributing to and has leads to very severe health consequences. Petitioners essentially argue that Box Elder and Tooele should be excused from the solution to this problem, but the Clean Air Act dictates that both areas that are contributing and areas that are violating the standard have to be included within a non-attainment area so that all of those areas can contribute to the solution, which is achieving the NAAQS.
All right, thank you. All right, counsel for petition, we'll give you a couple of minutes.
Thank you. I'll quickly tick through some points then. On the point about Salt Lake City versus Box Elder County Windrose, it defies common sense to say that one monitor in the middle of this whole area is the most relevant, and it defies EPA's own methodology. And our real, you know, what really got us, you know, caught our attention in this case is when they changed the data for that Box Elder and Weber monitor, Weber County, but they do not change their conclusion. And so at page...
Well, counsel gave our EPA's explanation for that, and why is that arbitrary and capricious?
Well, at page 469 of the joint appendix, Your Honor, this is language that EPA had in its proposed rule and in its final rule. And I will point the court to the first full paragraph that starts with "in a similar consideration," the last sentence. Also, as we noted earlier, wind pollution roses for Box Elder County, Brigham City, and Weber County both show a northwest and southeast component for the prevailing winds. That was correct with their proposed rule, with the Salt Lake City Met data.
I know, they explained now why, looking at the Hill Air Force Base, you heard my question back. Yeah,
that they don't address this. They have to address it in the record. I mean, this is a significant change.
But this supports their position.
It does, but the data they're relying upon is at page 53 of their brief.
But they told you why that isn't the critical windrose.
Well, I'm just talking about how they describe this windrose. And the original windrose using Salt Lake City data shows influence from the northwest. And if you track through the windroses that we
I
cite.
Counsel, you're going to have to show me somewhere where they said or failed to acknowledge this Hill Air Force Base monitored data
and said,
even though it's totally contrary to everything else that we know about this area, we're going to ignore it. They didn't do that.
They didn't do it because they didn't address it.
Well, they said...
They have to address new evidence.
No, they said the other data was the relevant data.
That's what they're saying here. That's not what they were saying in their technical support document.
But in the response to comments, that's what counsel cited me to. That is where EPA explains why this Hill Air Force monitor data is not the critical data.
Your Honor, they can't take away the data that they the problem
but
is
they responded to, you heard counsel, she said they responded to the state of Utah and they also responded to other comments, I think she said, and that's EPA's response to this data. And my question is, why is that response arbitrary and capricious?
Because they have a patently false statement in their technical support document that they relied upon to find contribution. They say,
and you're saying that is at JA 469?
Yes, the sentence I pointed out. And if you compare the original statement to the final statement, the statement stays the same. The monitors switch. So the statement is false. It doesn't add up.
All right, what else?
On the issue of percentages versus actual emissions, at page 37 of our brief, we actually cite Utah's analysis on the potential for commuters to actually have an impact with actual calculations. And that was the point I made in my opening, but I just wanted to point you to that position in the brief, in the record, where Utah actually calculated how much these commuters could impact, and it's very insignificant. And finally, on the two different tests, it is our view, and we felt this was very significant, if you will. Back east, evidence has to meet a significant contribution test. The bar is higher.
Is that really clear from the language they use there? I don't know that it's clear that they were applying a different test. The word significant appears, you're correct, but it's not crystal clear to me that they're applying a different test. And in any event, the test they're applying here is consistent with the Catawba County decision, right?
Well, they modified the test somewhat. They use a weighted emission scores in Catawba. It's different. And again, we really aren't taking issue with the overall test. It's how they applied it with the MET data. We don't feel they've made the case that they need to for the contribution. And
it's a little bit of an argument, gee, they might have misapplied it back east, which is, I understand the litigation strategy, but it's a tough argument if it's applied consistently with Catawba County here.
Well, my clients are entitled to a consistent and a standard they can understand, and that's the difficulty.
Well, the nine-factor test, you're not going to really have a lot of clarity.
Well, right.
It gives a wide range of discretion to the agency, as you're well aware.
You're correct, Your Honor, and it is nine factors. But once they say what the factors are, let's say population. Is it population or percentages? We have two different ones. Is it any contribution? Is it significant? We have two different ones.
The idea is the factors, both the overall assessment of the factors and the individual factors may be looked at differently depending on whether you're in a place like Hartford, which is much different topography and weather and wind than a place like Salt Lake. So I
think
you're not going to get perfect consistency, it strikes me, between the individual factors or the overall assessment.
I agree. We can't have perfect consistency, but there's so many places where, and we submitted the table to try and establish this, there's so many places that they're not consistent, that the bar is much lower. And I really think the critical thing is the MET data, the meteorological conclusions, and we walk through point by point why that doesn't add up. So if there are no other questions.
They're saying it's the wrong days you were looking at as well.
Frankly, I just don't understand how you, if you're looking at a big area, mm-hmm. right, and you admit as EPA that you want localized meteorological data. It makes sense, right? You want the closest data. You admit that.
But they want the data on the days Salt Lake County is violating the standard.
Right? The wind rose that for Box Elder and Weber, page 53, those are violation days. That's the whole point of any wind rose. So those are on par. I mean, these are the centuries. This is between the gate, between Box Elder and Salt Lake City. So they're saying, even though the data directly next to Box Elder doesn't show contribution.
Today's the Salt Lake monitor violated the standard, right?
That's not telling us what's going on in the north. That's the problem. That's why you use localized MET data, Your Honor.
All right. Can I just ask you, in the replacement page for your reply brief, the chart?
Yes.
Are there any changes other than in the second to last box?
No. What happened was somehow when we hit print, the printer jumbled it, and I didn't notice till I was reading.
That's fine.
The electronic version looks fine.
All right. Thank you. All right. We will take the case under advisement. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors.
I have a